Really, that's about it from the L29's perspective. It is the Aero Dahode is the company that makes it. They also make the L39. They kind of shortened their name to just Aero. The L39 is the newer, younger brother to the L29, and they basically took an L29 and said, well, what would we do to make it easier to operate, and how would we modify it to now train people to fly the MiG-23, the MiG-25, the newer, more modern jets, and that's what the L39 was created from. But really, when you start looking at an L39, it's built just exactly like an L29. A little different engine in it. Under 10,000 feet, the L29 actually outperforms the L39. The wings are, because they're longer, it'll do better aerobatics, it'll do better, you know, ACM, air combat maneuvers. You fly against guys with L39s, and if they're not really good sticks, you know, they'll be upset because their $250,000 jet is being chased by a $40,000 jet. Doesn't make anybody happy. Over 10,000 feet, the L39 really excels as a bypass turbofan engine. Can go a little bit better range, not much. But the big thing is it does have a very, very good air conditioner in it. So no air conditioning in this airplane. The funny part of it is that some of you have been to Reno and seen the jet races. The jet races are pretty cool. The first year they did them, it was really just an exposition and not a real race yet, and they let MiG-17s and MiG-15s race as well. And there's a very interesting mod that a lot of guys are doing to the L29 to make it operate a little bit more interestingly. They do a Viper conversion. There's really two. There's a GE engine that can be installed in place of the M701, and there's also the Rolls-Royce Viper engines. And the Viper was used in a whole bunch of British jets. There's all sorts of training jets, and I don't even know their jets that well. But so there's a lot of those engines out there. They're very easy to come by. They're also a very solid, very dependable engine. But unlike the M701, the Vipers are anywhere between 2,800 pounds of thrust and 4,000 to 5,000 pounds of thrust. So if you take an L29, put a slightly lighter engine in it, bump up the thrust by double or better, now you're really talking about a little airplane that really can go do things. And it was interesting because the demo year, one of the guys flying the L29 was flying the Viper-equipped L29, and he thought, well, maybe I better be smart about this and not let anybody know what's going on. So he finished fourth behind two L39s, or fifth, between two L39s and two MiG-17s. But the first year of the air races, the next year he went out there and just blew everybody off the street. Turns out, and so now all the L29s are the dominant pylon airplane, again, because of the big, strong wing, because it's able to turn, and with the Viper engines, it's got lots and lots of thrust. They designed it for 443 knots, do not exceed, but they're routinely flying in the 505 to 510 mile an hour range, which is moving right along. That's really about it. I'm actually getting ready to load up and head out because I got to get out before the air show. So anybody have any questions about the L29? Sure. Ejection seats does have them. Almost nobody uses them. The early Soviet design ejection seat was what they call a pyrotechnic round. It wasn't a rocket. And it's really hard on you, especially if you're little. The acceleration could break your back before you ever got out of the airplane. The other side is it's got that T-tail on it, and at certain airspeeds, you can't clear the tail. Most everybody in the community says don't use the seats. The plane is so overbuilt. I think you could land in a stand of trees and the trees are going to lose. I mean, it's a very rugged, strong airplane. And so they always say, if unless you're on fire and you think you're going to blow up, just stay in the airplane. If you got to get out, you can blow the canopies off, just roll it over like a World War II fighter and jump out. Yes, sir. They did, and actually the Czechs were the ones that I told you mentioned made the airplane to begin with. They also made the L-39, and they used both. It kind of depended on what they were trying to do. But, of course, this airplane came out, you know, a full 10 years before the L-39 was really being developed. So the L-39 just came out later. But, yeah, its mission and purpose in life is to do primary flight training, navigation training, advanced training, and it even does weapons training. It'll carry gun pods. It'll carry rocket pods, it'll carry small practice bombs. The mine still has the gun sight in it that traditional 50s and 60s gun sight that all the Russian airplanes used. MiG-21 gun sight looked very, very similar. MiG-17 gun sight looked identical to it. So, yes, sir. Would not surprise me. There's a number of air forces that used the L-29 for sure and the L-39 actually in offensive operations. Matter of fact, I just read something on the internet today, and I didn't even know about it, that the Russians, when they were, what was that last country that just the Russians had a war with? They were stepping out of line, and the Russians went in, and everybody got mad, like 2008. The Georgians had two L-29s with cannons on them, and the Russians shot them down. So they were still using them. Go ahead. Oh, that's a good question. I should have mentioned that. The Viper mod is a very interesting mod. Already talked about the speed and how great that is. But actually, it really helps the fuel economy, too. It'll fly at 24 to 28,000 feet and burns about 90 gallons an hour versus the 160. So now, of course, your true airspeed is a lot better. You know, you're getting the airspeed, you get over the weather, all that side of stuff. The bad news is on the ground at idle, the Viper's burning almost as much as gas as mine is full open. It's 160 to 180 gallons an hour just running. So the guys that have the Vipers, always cracks me up. They'll roll them out to the runways and aim them down the runways. And then they jump in, and as soon as they hit the start button, they go, you know, because they want to get up to altitude and doing whatever they want to do just as fast as they can do it so they don't waste any gas. Any other questions? Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead. The Czechs designed it to be 500 hours. I know guys that have kept them longer than that. You just watch the EGT until it gets too high. Some have gone to 2,000 hours. But here's the other thing that's funny about them. The Soviets had a different mentality than we did to about a lot of things, and I'm not going to say it's good or bad. But, you know, we would say, all right, this F-15, I'm going to build X number of attitude indicators because I have this many F-15s. I'll double that number for replacements and add 30%, and I'll contract some company to make them, and I'll make them and put them in a box, and I'll be done with it. The Soviet Union, they'll find some little town, put a factory in, and say, make attitude indicators. And they were making them until the fall of the Soviet Union. So there'd be warehouses full of attitude indicators. The engines for this airplane, you can find them anywhere from $8,000 to $10,000 in a box, brand new, ready to go, bolt them in about 40 minutes once you get the tail off. Nothing to it. And they told some guy somewhere in Czechoslovakia was outsourcing it to other countries, make engines until we tell you to stop. So unlike the L-39 where the engines are a real issue, the L-29 engines, dime a dozen. Any other questions? Thank you all very much.
Thanks, Bill. Interesting thing, too, Bill's comments about the lead-ins. If you looked at the Yak-18 and the Straight 52's cockpits, and then look in the Yak-3 and the Yak-9 for World War II, and then you look in the early MiGs, the cockpits are also identical. Since they all used air for raising and lowering the gear and flaps, there were also the emergency valves for the emergency system. In all those airplanes, they were in the exact same spot. There was also a white stripe painted down the center of the instrument panel. And that was where peasant students were taught to put the stick if the airplane went out of control. So forward stick, brakes a stall, center the stick, you take pro or aileron out from any spin condition, and then you just got to step on the appropriate rudder. But from the Yak-18 to the 52 to the early jets, right up through the MiG-21s, the cockpits are identical based on their systems. The other interesting thing about the 52, they have a hard point under each wing. And the hard point it can also accept a pylon, which can mount practice munitions, small machine guns, because they also use the airplane as initial gunnery school airplanes. Because of its efficiency. Bill mentioned the ejection seats. Even U.S. ejection seats were black powder seats up through about the F-4, say the Century Series airplanes. And they optimized that charge for the heaviest guy that would get in that cockpit. And I think if I remember from my F-4 days, that was 250 pounds. So when you pulled the handle, that black powder charge went off at full grunt. If you weighed 167 pounds like I did, there was a high probability the lightweight guys would get compressed discs and spinal injuries. The heavyweight guys probably wouldn't. When we built the Aces 2 seat, we put in a couple of new features. One, they're rocket motor seats. And two, there's a sensor and a computer in the seat. When the pilot sits in the seat measures your gross weight and your center of gravity. And if you pull the handle, it will meter thrust out the two nozzles. One is under the seat, one is about the middle of your back. And it will give you the same feet per second up the rail rather than the same 250-pound stroke up the seat. So in an Aces 2 seat, if you're a 170-pound person versus a 250-pound person, the seat will still give you the 330 feet per second stroke up the rail rather than crushing your spine with a full stroke each time because you're not measuring those weights and centers of gravity. Dan now has got his Machi here that he's going to tell you about, and then when he's done, I will wrap this up. We'll both be answering any further questions you have about our airplane, so take it away, Dan.